You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Kathputli Colony, a sprawling slum located in West Delhi, India, and home to the world's largest community of artists and street performers, is facing a threat that we're all too familiar with here in New York: gentrification. The colony's very way of life is being threatened as residents are fighting being forced from their homes because the government and developers have made plans to build a shopping center and luxury flats. The documentary Tomorrow We Disappear, which is now available on video on demand, shows us the magic and wonder of the colony as well as the human cost of progress as these artists and performers struggle to find their place in the modern world. I'm very pleased to welcome the directors of it, of the film, Jimmy Goldblum and Adam Weber, to our show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks.
Jimmy, what originally drew you to the Kathputli Colony? Is this a famous place?
It is in some way. I mean, Adam and I were both English majors at the University of Pennsylvania, and we had actually read a book, Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie. And as many are familiar, late into that book, the main character goes into a magician's ghetto. And I remember reading this about 5 years ago at this point and just coming to that section and being like, what is a magician's ghetto? So I Googled India plus magician's ghetto and found a one paragraph article about the Kathputli Colony.
Can you give us an idea of what life is like in the colony, Adam?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a wonderful place. We tried very hard to show that in the film, but it's a place that it does have open sewers. It is very slum-like, like what you would imagine and see photos of.
Houses flood sometimes.
Houses flood.
Sewers overflow.
Mm-hmm, all the time, and people cook outside, and there are trash-burning fires. But what's unique about this place is that there's predominantly artist families. So you also see people juggling on rooftops. You see magicians teaching their sons magic tricks. You see a stilt walker preparing for a birthday party. And so it's a really wild place, and everybody's very warm.
But they make their living mostly as street performers, or, mm-hmm. and the occasional birthday party. Are there no circuses that they would belong to?
Well, you would see the old photos of Mary Ellen Mark of the Indian Circus that were in the 80s, and, you know, these were those performers. But a lot of those traveling circuses have sort of broken down. I mean, it started to happen in the 50s with radio and television coming into the rural villages. And, you know, subsequently, a lot of these artists who used to travel town to town just ended up moving to the cities and building, you know, what were originally tent camps and eventually became slums.
How many of the residents were born into the colony?
In the 50s originally?
Well, I assume that there's a thing that happens here that it probably happens in many mm-hmm. circus families. It's passed on from parent to the children.
Mm-hmm.
So this started in the 50s?
This tent camp, they were basically itinerant performers traveling all over the Indian countryside and going from hill station to city to hill station. And they sort of were using this place as a stopover point, as a resting area outside the capital city. And in the 50s, they really started to make this more of a permanent settlement.
Isn't this government-owned land?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of hard. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of, you know, you have to understand that, you know, historical context, this was all happening sort of post-partition with the British leaving. So who owned what was a little bit relative at that point in time. And also, this was jungle outside of New Delhi. I mean, Delhi is a city without natural borders. So people were just growing outward and outward. And so these artists didn't come into a city. They went out to the forest and cut down trees and set up tents.
We've seen that in a lot of the huge cities around the world. There are shanty towns on the outskirts, mm-hmm. and then they become part of the regular city.
Yeah, what's so amazing about Delhi in particular in these sort of like booming economies, fast-growing economies, is that the city expands horizontally so quickly that it just absorbs any colonies and settlements around it.
Well, should they have seen this coming? Well, or did it take them by surprise?
I think, and even in Midnight's Children, Rushdie hints at this, that they are accustomed to getting forced out and getting sort of pushed around and cleared off the land. That has happened before, and there's always rumors looming over them that this will happen again. So this certainly isn't the first time. It's the most serious and most legitimate time.
Other than the very human cost here, can you tell us what else is at stake if the community is dismantled? What will India stand to lose?
Oh, I mean, I just think this is an enormous home for their cultural heritage. And, you know, for us, a lot of what the movie is exploring is this sort of interrelationship between art and architecture. I mean, to us, what might look like a slum is also a place that's been created to, you know, allow 10-foot puppets to, you know, to be constructed or stilt walkers to move. So, you know, when you take these people and then you move them out of the space into what is more like a 10-by-10 condo-like development, you're going to lose a lot of things in that process. And that's really what we're looking at here.
So what about this deal between the Delhi Development Agency and the Raheja developers? Is this some kind of thing where government and developers all work together for what they see as the betterment of the city?
Yeah, I think what's happening as India is trying to become a new modern Delhi is certainly trying to become a new modern city is that the government sort of owns the land and sells that to the developers, and with the agreement that you build your luxury high-rise first ever skyscraper within the city limits, you build the luxury shopping complex. You build all these pieces of development that will lead to a modern India, but you also should build these low-income flats that these artists can then move into.
Well, we were talking about modern India, but you catch the interaction between Raman, who's a magician, and the police when they ask for a bribe of 500 rupees in order to allow him to complete his show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, what we're sort of indicating there is that this isn't just, you know, just developers and government pushing the artists out, that there's actually modern forces at work as well. There's, you know, audience attention, you know, cell phones are probably as much a threat to these artists' way of life as the developers.
And they were very open with you. Raman, for example, discusses his struggle to feed his family. And Maya, a young acrobat, actually sheds tears in front of the camera as a relative talks about an accident that left Maya, quote, unfit for marriage.
Yeah, that was her mother actually in the background of that shot, and that was a really powerful moment for us where she tells us that she got into a bus accident very early on and sort of is unable to reproduce, which in a traditional culture means she's sort of, quote, unmarriable, as her mother put it. They are very open people, and I think for us to get to that level of trust was just a matter of coming back every day. We spent months and months with them and came back year after year for 3 years.
Because of the controversy, have the police been cracking down on them? Did you run into any difficulties with the police while you were filming them?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in those scenes where we go and visit the transit camp, we would actually play this sort of fun cat and mouse game where we would, you know, armed guards would come up to us and say, hey, like, you aren't allowed to be filming in these transit camps, which were developed by Raheja. And we would say, oh, well, the people in the office allowed us to. And then they would go there and then we would meet the next guard and we would say, oh, that guard actually said we could do it. And we just wound our way through the labyrinthine transit camp until they all kind of congregated and realized we were lying.
Now, the transit camp has been set up by the developer,
yes,
to move the people from Kathputli into something before they then are given housing elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And very few of the people at Kathputli seem to think this is a good idea.
I think that's exactly right. I think most people have been protesting, and are against this idea. It's also a mission of ours in the film to show just how confusing this information trickles down to them.
But what about the other people in Delhi? Do they see the Kathputli residents as slum dwellers or as artists?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I think that's sort of the core of the film.
Because I looked on the internet, mm-hmm, and there are a lot of people who are blaming the CIA for supporting the Kathputli artists. Somehow they say this is a plot against India.
Well, look, I mean, these artists, you know, our main character, Piran Bhatt, I mean, he's traveled to more countries than we have. You know, he's been to something like 28 countries at this point. So any time that India decides to show its cultural heritage to the world, these are the artists that they bring. They've been to the Smithsonian, they've been to the Barbican in London, they've been all over the place. But then they come back and live in a place that doesn't even have sewage systems, you know, running water.
How much of this is the result of the caste system in India?
It's a great question. I think the colony sort of prides itself on being across castes. I mean, obviously, a lot of them belong to lower castes. But they're, you know, you see in the colony Hindus and Muslims living together, people of different castes. They're very open. They consider, like, artists its own caste. But certainly that's an element there.
There are some people in the community who do see this as a positive thing, that it will help them all modernize. Is this also a fight to some degree between modernization, gentrification, and tradition?
Absolutely. I think we chose charismatic characters, but we also chose characters, you know, a magician, acrobat, and puppeteer who we thought sort of existed on that trajectory between, like, you know, if we leave this place, our cultural, you know, heritage will die, versus people who believe that they can step into a modern world and still bring their art with them. And we wanted to show those tensions because we don't think it's an easy answer.
Well, one of them, a puppeteer named Puran, says early in the film, "All we want is for you to remember us to keep our art alive." Do you think that folk art and street performance have any place in the modern world other than being aspects of older traditions?
I certainly hope so. I think I think that's exactly what the movie – that's the question the movie asks, which is, when you develop a new modern city, what's to be lost? And when these folk arts, when these traditional arts are lost, there's a certain cultural heritage that gets lost too. There's thousands of years of tradition that gets lost.
Do you think that life within the slums is in any way over-romanticized sometimes?
I think for us, that was one of the reasons that we show a lot of those scenes with, you know, open sores and show, you know, former animal trainers who became trash pickers. Because what we wanted to do was not neglect the fact that this place is a slum, but show it as a slum that people want to live in and then ask why. And we think that's a far more powerful story.
Isn't their being expelled inevitable, whether they resist or not?
Yeah.
Oh, man. We'll see. I think, yes, it's an inevitability. I mean, you know, modernization will always win. The future will always win over the past. I think it's just one of those things, and we're just right now in our lives trying to wrestle with that, and this project was just us trying to deal with it.
And you devoted several years to it.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
You just kept on going back?
It's been a journey, yeah. We went back every year for about 3 years, and we've been in contact with them. When we premiered, I mean, this goes back to 2011 when we first went there, and then when the movie premiered in 2014, Puran Bhatt was flown out by the Tribeca Film Festival to represent the film for New York, and that was just like a testament to how we've stayed in touch, a testament to how much we care about them and how much they respected what we were doing.
And he just loved the Statue of Liberty. He just thought it was the most beautiful giant puppet he's ever seen.
So what's the current situation? Are they still living there?
Yeah, I mean, of about 3,000 families that live in Kathputli, only 300 have moved to the transit camps, and those 300 are non-artist families. So all the artists are staying, they're protesting. We've managed to get the film to the New Delhi government, which is the AAP, which is far more sympathetic to their cause. So, you know, we're not naive about, you know, about the realities of modern politics and gentrification, but, you know, we're vigilant and slightly hopeful.
And your title, obviously, has a number of different meanings. Tomorrow we disappear, because you're talking about magicians. At the same time, you're also talking about people who are afraid that everything they do might disappear.
Right. Yeah. That title sort of came to us just as we were about to leave on our first trip, and we were sort of just wrestling with these ideas, reading these rumors about this place going away, and sort of it's because it seemed like an inevitability, and fast forward to when the movie comes out, they're still protesting. Only a fraction of them have moved to the transit camps. It is looming as tomorrow this will happen.
It's been shown at festivals. Mm-hmm. It's available on video on demand. Will we be able to see it in any theaters?
We hope so. There will be some event screenings at different places.
But it's available on iTunes now, and, you know, we hope that people can watch it on as big a screen as possible.
If you have a big TV set, that's preferable.
Yes, yeah, invite your friends.
My great thanks to both of you for being on our show, Adam Weber, Jimmy Goldblum, the directors, producers, writers of Tomorrow We Disappear, which, as we have just said, is available on VOD.
Thank you so much.
It's such a pleasure.